And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton on the FM dial, as well as the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, thanks to our online streaming service, and I recommend you check that out on our website. As we promised, we do have Professor Herman Rosenfeld with us today. He's going to be discussing a very exciting event that's coming up, which is called Building Solidarity from South Africa to Palestine. Let's see if we have Professor Herman Rosenfeld with us. Can you hear me?
Indeed, I can.
Excellent. Thanks for taking the time to be here. I know you're moving about and you've got a lot to do, because Professor Rosenfeld, he's retired from the CAW, where he has been a staffer in the education department, no doubt involved with a lot of interesting research, teachings, education of workers and outside into the community. I know there's been a lot of activity of that nature. And now he is still helping with the community, in this case, as a professor here, a sessional instructor in labor studies at McMaster. And it's great to see people involved in these kind of events in the community, bringing what's going to be a very exciting tour stop and event here in Hamilton. And there's a lot we could say about this particular tour. It's called Building Solidarity from South Africa to Palestine. So in terms of how the labor movement caught on to this, could you tell us maybe what some reasons are why Palestinian unions and movements and conditions perhaps are being compared in this respect to South Africa?
Yeah, that's a $64 question. Actually, South Africa was a central was one of the last bastions of a kind of neocolonialism in Africa, where you had a relatively small group of descendants of white colonists basically oppressing masses of Africans, and they set up a system called apartheid, which is, it's like the name sounds, was basically, they called it separate development. And the idea was that Africans were kept in particular places. They were only allowed to work in other places. And there was a series of segregations, and there was a relationship of domination and oppression. And there was a movement built around the world to actually isolate the regime, the South African regime, in order to pressure them to bring democracy and to get rid of apartheid. And the particular trade unit element of it is that most of the people, the African people, were basically they were doing labor, and the trade unions, the unions, which is a mass of organized, the mass of working people, were separate, and the trade union movement was a critical part in South Africa of the fight against South Africa apartheid, and unions around the world were enlisted as part of the battle to get rid of apartheid. And the question is, why would unions have a particular interest in this? Because corporations were the main international corporations, and investors were the main beneficiaries of this system, and the same folks who exploited workers here.
Yes, you know, I'm thinking in terms of the South African struggle, it has quite an interesting history, quite a respected history now in Canada. Many people were involved in that. Unions were at the forefront of justice, recognizing the racial component, the injustice that was occurring, the exploitation of labor targeted in certain ways. There was a lot of pressure brought on South Africa. In fact, I think first you said the fight against South Africa, and of course then you said the fight against South African apartheid, because it wasn't a fight against South Africa.
No, it wasn't at all. In fact, it was a fight to actually for South Africa to realize its potential and what it really could be.
That's right, to transform the society. And the unions had to take some flack on that, and there was some name-calling involved, but over time people recognized the validity of that struggle, and now people are proud to have been associated with that and have made a positive difference. And so I can see why unions have been involved in that campaign, and they are getting involved in Palestine and with organizations there. What organizations exist to work with in Palestine if you are, say, a Western or North American labor union?
Well, the Palestinian liberation movements are around, but for the labor union, we work with people affiliated with the Palestine General Federation of Trade Unions. However, there is a recent coming together of a number of different of union centrals and unions in South Africa around a call for what they call boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And the idea is to put pressure and isolate Israeli apartheid in various ways, to actually pressure them to transform their society to be able to accommodate the equality and for the Palestinian. And it's around three major demands. One is the right to return to the Palestinians who were kicked out of their country. Two is an end to the occupation, and three is equality for Arab people living inside Israel.
Just as the comparisons to apartheid have elicited a lot of attention, certainly this BDS, this Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions campaign has as well. I know it's been discussed a bit on this program when we were speaking with members of Independent Jewish Voices, especially when the fundraisers were being organized in relation to the Gaza boat and other things. You know, it's really interesting as Canadians, you know, what can you do? And unions are looking at this in a specific context. So how do you build solidarity as a union? Is it a solidarity of movements, of people, of ideas? What does it mean in this context?
Well, it means a number of things, and a number of those. One is I think it means supporting BDS struggle, the BDS movement. Two, it's actually doing education inside your unions about, just like around the South, that was the main push around fighting the apartheid regime, to actually taking up education amongst members about why it's so critical for a social justice perspective, as well as a common struggle against corporations and capital and neoliberalism, against that in a minute, to take up this struggle. So, I mean, it's a question of giving resources, but it's mostly a question of actually supporting this battle and actually winning over people, the idea. Because, you know, the South African anti-apartheid struggle was hard at the beginning as well. You had people around there, particularly people who represented the South African government. I was around, and I remember, arguing that this would hurt the Africans, some kind of isolation, and also that apartheid was really fair, and it really was not a problem. And you had certain media outlets that followed that. This is more difficult. It's more difficult because unions, for a long time, and quite properly so, wanted to make sure that there's no issue that they fight anti-Semitism as well, and that they weren't able to be, categorized of that kind. And it was a while before a lot of the unions really began to understand that this really is still a battle against anti-Semitism, but it really is a question of liberation and fighting a very, very awful kind of injustice, which had nothing to do with protecting the rights of Jewish people.
Yes, this is about social justice for all, for everyone in Israel-Palestine that's involved here. Just as it was in South Africa, those activities in South Africa sometimes were accused of being against the South African government, destroy South Africa, etc. Of course, that was not the case. You know, in terms of unions, information about this issue is being passed all around Hamilton unions, and I've seen the flyer and poster for this event, very impressive, and there's quite an impressive list of sponsors on here. We don't have time to read it all. You've got everything from Tadamon, Montreal, to QP Local 2491. You have QP Toronto District Council, the division in Ontario as well.
QP Ontario Division.
Yeah.
There's the entire Canadian Union of Postal Workers, which is incredibly progressive on these issues, and a number of little central labor councils across Ontario, and actually there we also in the CSN in Quebec, and the Central Council of the CSN, which in Montreal, which is really the big major labor council there. So it's across, but it's selective. But there's been a lot of tremendous progress around this issue in the last few years. Remember, just like when we started around South African education, it was small, and this is still taking up because it's a hard battle. It's one of the last places where this kind of situation really exists in the world. There are all kinds of forms of oppression, but this particular kind is pretty unique to that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. And that understanding is filtering through the ranks, I suppose, from the rank and file to the rank and file across the unions. And you had mentioned neoliberalism, and of course, an issue of this size, of this magnitude, must be related to global issues. It's not just what's happening inside Israel and Palestine. It must be related to international sponsors, the global economy, the United States. I'm seeing talk about neoliberalism and how it might be affecting people in Palestine. You know, this is an economic condition, an economic philosophy. Is there a way you think that it might be affecting people on the ground in Palestine in particular?
Well, it very much is. There was a time about when the South African battle was really heating up in the late 80s and early 90s, where still there was still an idea that you had an international challenge to the ability of corporations to actually, or private capitalism, to dominate every part of the economy and every part of the world. One of the realities of this neoliberal era we're living in today is that there's a general sense that they can control everything. And it's a series of policies, same kind of policies here that lead them to actually bring in migrant workers without any rights instead of, we fight for those people to gain rights here. They have people from a number of different parts of the world replacing Palestinian labor. Secondly, is that both Israel has been totally sort of reorganized around a neoliberal perspective in privatization, cuts to social programs, and that sort of thing. And it hits hardest. It hits hard on Israeli working people, but it hits even hardest on Palestinians, both in Israel and on the West Bank. So what happens is that there's this tremendous competitive push to figure out ways to squeeze huge profits as much as they possibly can out of the labor of Palestinians. And part of it is politically limited by the fact that they also want to keep, politically, they want to keep Palestinian labor as much as possible out of Israel itself.
It's really meant a lot of tremendous misery. The way it seems to me it's being described, it's like you're having it both ways. On the one hand, there's policies in Israel that may discriminate against the Palestinian and Arab population, may exclude them in many ways. But on the other hand, it seems that the Israeli economy has a demand for cheap migrant or precarious labor. So is there an arrangement where perhaps it's like a NAFTA or Mexico type thing where there is a group of people who structurally end up in these low-wage jobs?
Well, actually, that's what it was for a really long time. But increasingly now is that they're actually replacing Palestinian labor with people from other countries who are even more exploited.
Wow.
And it builds a competition between people, which obviously is also a need in solidarity. And it's also flavored and textured by the occupation. And in Gaza, for example, because they want to isolate Gaza, there's a blockade around Gaza. Like, there's 98% of industrial operations are idle.
That's the other thing I was thinking about, because what you're describing here is a race to the bottom, and people that, you know, come out to an event such as the one that's coming up on the 24th here in Hamilton, they want to hear about social justice, they want to know and learn more, and it also impacts on our pocketbook, you know, what the kind of jobs that are being created in Palestine, in Canada, precarious labor. And for Palestinians, it's a double whammy, because not only do they have to contend with the changes in the global economy, which are perhaps concentrated in several respects there, but also this blockade. So how are Palestinians being affected, especially in the last year or two, by this tightening blockade?
Well, as I mentioned, in Gaza, there is a blockade, and we're looking at almost half the population doesn't have any work. Yes. And there's been about 120,000 private sector jobs lost there since the onset of this blockade. So you have this situation where electricity, heating oil, natural gas, construction materials, all of the things that people need, not to mention that the I've read somewhere that almost 50% of Gaza's agricultural services have been rendered unproductive for the military use as buffers, because it's a small place, eh?
Yes.
And then on the West Bank, you basically have like a quarter of the population that's unemployed. And you have these ridiculous military checkpoints and roadblocks as fences and obstacles which separate Palestinian workers from what used to be their workplaces.
But what about fishing? I know that it had been very difficult. There have been limitations placed on waters, and it must be especially difficult now with the aid flotilla, the second round of this happening. It must be very difficult to get any supplies in there or any trade that's not approved by Israel.
Well, yeah, that's right. You just ask the question, and that's the answer. You talked about this in people's pocketbooks and stuff. This is one of the places where the battle is the heart. And it's not as if that a victory in transforming the rights of Palestinians and transforming their national rights and regaining it in some form will change the world at all. But it will make a big difference. The United States still sees Israel sort of as a base for which it and Canada too. You notice that our now unfortunate majority government that's going to be there for 4 or 5 years is a very, very firm ally of all of this stuff. And they don't allow any criticism. They don't brook any criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it tough. And it's really important. It's one of the reasons why it's really important for organizations of working people, which are very much independent of the Harper and the conservative world in this country, start taking this up.
Well, we know where Harper stands on this issue on Israel. And for Canadians and ordinary Canadians, working Canadians and members of unions, in terms of what we can do, we can go to this event, which is Tuesday, May 24th. At 6 to 8 p.m. in the Burke Science Building, BSB, room 108 here at McMaster. Now, I'm just wondering, before we go, can you tell us a little bit about Dr. Barjam? I understand he's one of the main presenters, and I don't think we've seen him before. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he does a lot of... He's a mathematician, and he does a lot of writing and work around the question of academic boycott. And the idea isn't to persecute individual Israeli academics, but it's basically a critique of the entire of the basic academic establishment in Israel at the present time as being used as a way to oppress Palestinians. And he's written quite a bit about that. And I just remember reading one piece that he wrote when he talked about when he was crossing one of those awful crossings in in the West Bank that one of the soldiers there was a fellow mathematician. And instead of treating him as a colleague, the guy was as a military guy in the military. And he tried to get him to answer a question about mathematics in order to allow him to, quote, to get across to some kind of a conference.
Yes.
And he found it humiliating. Wouldn't you?
Well, this is something we don't get to hear much about. I find it especially interesting, so we definitely want to see this. And I'll mention the other speakers and other details shortly. I know you've got to get going, but I'm so glad you could be here with us on this, because I had only heard about this event a few weeks ago, and then I started letting people know, and they were glad that it was happening. I think there's a lot of people in Hamilton that will be happy the event is taking place, and we're thankful that they made the time to do a tour stop for us, and we can see some of our favorite speakers as well as new people we haven't heard before. So, Professor Rosenfeld, I want to thank you once again for taking the time to be on our program today. Our listeners really appreciate it, and it shows why we have community radio here in Hamilton.
Thank you very much.
And we'll hear more from you if there's any ads, and we'll make sure that listeners, people in the movements get a hold of that. So thanks for all the good work you're doing.
Thank you.
And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Professor Herman Rosenfeld. As we mentioned at the beginning, or as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, he is a sessional instructor here in labor studies at McMaster. He's a retired staffer in the educational department in the Canadian Auto Workers Union. I'm going to mention some details about the event. That is Tuesday, May 24th. So that's just next Tuesday, less than a week from now, 6 days. In fact, exactly 6 days from now, because it's at 6 o'clock p.m. So exactly 6 days from now, you can be on your way to Burke Science Building, room 108. And at McMaster, the common shorthand for that is BSB. So if you just go on down to BSB, room 108 here at McMaster, that is going to be at 6 to 8 p.m. I don't believe there's an admission charge. At least they haven't mentioned one. There might be some fundraising there or donations. But the sponsor list is quite impressive. I read perhaps too randomly from it. You can find that online. There's several places you can find information about it. So you can go to Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. That's www.HamiltonCoalitionToStopTheWar.ca. And in the events section, there is the full-size color poster, as well as text information, and a link to the Facebook group. So if you go to the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War Facebook group, there is a section for that event where you can get the details.